Republicans in the U.S. Senate are looking for the votes they need to pass a tax bill that they say will benefit the middle class and make the tax system more streamlined. The plan passed a big hurdle this afternoon when it was advanced by the Senate Budget Committee by a 12-11 vote. Republicans Bob Corker of Tennessee and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin had expressed reservations about the bill but ended up being yes votes. Stephen S. Smith is a professor of political science and the director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University. Stephen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, this is a story that's developing all day and all week. This was a big potential hurdle, this budget committee. Is that right?
Well, yeah. It's a committee that's comprised of 12 Republicans and 11 Democrats. So it could potentially turn the other way, and they needed to get the bill referred to the floor, and they got it.
And what do we know as the bill stands now about how tax cuts would be distributed for lower income earners, middle class, and so on?
Well, let me first say that there are several sources of estimates, and the source we care most about is something called the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is a staff on Capitol Hill that has economists and other tax experts, and Congress relies on them to provide an estimate. They announced, actually within the hour, that they will not have an estimate ready for the Senate tax bill until late tomorrow afternoon. The Senate plans to take up the bill on Thursday, so the Senate will have the benefit of the official estimate for only a short while before they go to the floor with the bill. It looks like the bill is going to have, in short, two or three effects. One, of course, is a sharp reduction in business or corporate tax rates from the upper 30s down to 20%, according to the Senate bill. The House bill is nearly identical in that respect. On the personal side, individual income taxes, there is a rearrangement of brackets so that most individuals will be in a bracket, one of seven different brackets. We currently have seven. That will adjust downward most people's official tax rate. But at the same time, a number of tax breaks, including state and local income tax deductions, changes in how mortgage deductions are handled, and so on, will cause an increase in taxes. In order to make this affordable, the Senate sunsets, that is, brings to an end some of the changes in tax policy at various stages over the course of the next 10 years. And the best estimates that I've seen show that people in the lower income ranges will receive a small tax cut in the first few years, but that will disappear over the long run. Some will actually face a tax hike by the end of the 10-year period that these estimates are done for. The upper end, the multi-hundred-thousand-dollar end and up, will receive the largest tax breaks, and even at the end of 10 years, will still be experiencing a substantial tax break.
Talking to Stephen Smith from Washington University in St. Louis about the policy and politics of the tax overhaul now in the U.S. Senate. Stephen, Republicans can do this without any Democrats. They can lose a couple of Republicans. I want to move through some of the concerns from various Republicans. And one that's come up a lot, including Wisconsin's own Ron Johnson, it has to do with pass-through businesses. Can you tell us what that controversy is about and what could change there?
Well, many small and medium-sized businesses, of course, are privately owned. Those owners generally pay taxes on their business profits at the individual income tax rate. Incorporated businesses are treated under a separate part of the tax code and have separate rates. The Republicans plan to bring the corporate tax code rate, tax rate down to 20%, but the individual tax rates will be at a much higher percentage for most middle and upper middle income business owners. And so Senator Johnson, Senator Dayne from Montana, and a few others have expressed serious concern, especially Dane and Johnson, those small and medium business owners who have pass-through income, generally paid for at the individual income tax rate, should be getting a bigger break under this bill. And they've been holding out, at least until today, saying that they want to see a change on that side of things before they support the bill.
Is this like what happened in Kansas that people have been pointing toward, where that pass-through rate was lowered, a bunch of individuals basically turn themselves, in effect, into corporations to get that lower rate than they would pay as individuals?
That is a concern, because an awful lot of folks can incorporate and start selling their services as an incorporated entity and get a lower rate. The Senate bill includes some language, which I really can't detail for you here. I don't know it that well. That is intended to prevent that from happening. And there's some concern among senators that it's not strong enough and that stronger language needs to be put in the bill.
Another concern some Republicans have raised has to do with the health care individual mandate cut, which got rolled into the Senate plan, not at present in what passed in the House. Where is that now?
Well, it's still up in the air. There were some observers who thought that at least a couple of Republicans would object to that provision. Senator Collins especially has been concerned about health care. She's co-sponsored legislation to shore up Obamacare to stabilize the healthcare markets for those people who are on those exchanges. She seems to have backed off a little bit today. There's some a signal from her that she might allow the bill to go forward and hope that the problem will be addressed successfully in negotiations between the House and the Senate. She had actually hoped that her separate legislation would be passed first. There was some talk that she was going to make that a condition of supporting the tax bill, but she seems to have backed off from that today.
And then we have Republicans concerned about the impact these tax cuts would have on the deficit in the long run.
Yeah.
I know this. There's a lot of arguments about the numbers here, but again, based on what we know right now, what kind of deficit impact could this have?
Well, the best estimate we have so far, the Senate bill, is a $1.4 trillion addition to the national debt over a 10-year period. There's a little bit of disagreement about that, and that's why everyone's waiting for the Joint Committee on Taxation estimate. There's some discussion, of course. Republicans always insist on dynamic scoring because they think that if you cut taxes, you'll increase the flow of dollars in business, and that'll return revenue to the federal government, and so that the cost to the government won't be quite so great as you might think. Democrats point out that the deficit's bound to increase, and so the cost of supporting the deficit through interest payments will increase. And so the best estimates, honestly, are that the increase in the national debt will be in the neighborhood of $1.4 trillion over 10 years. It's really just a matter of a couple hundred billion either way over a 10-year period.
Now, Senator Bob Corker, as we mentioned, he voted for this in committee. He was one of the people worried about its impact on the deficit. I'm hearing a phrase I haven't heard before. I don't know exactly what it means. A revenue trigger being added to the Senate bill. What is that?
Well, we don't know yet because no language has been offered by anyone, as far as I know. But I'm sure that the general idea is that if federal revenues fall below a specified level, we don't know what that is yet, that it would trigger an increase in taxes to make sure that we meet that revenue target, thereby reducing the total deficit. But how that would work, whether it would work, is unclear.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say there are some Republicans who would object to the idea of a basically mandated tax increase in certain scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, the supply side argument that we need to cut taxes in order to spur the business investment and in turn increase jobs would be greatly undercut by the uncertainty that would occur year after year about whether or not a trigger is going to be pulled. If the whole point of this is to settle tax policy for the long term, reduce taxes, and encourage people to make long-term investments, a trigger is probably the surest way to undermine that.
We're talking to Stephen Smith. He's a professor of political science and director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University. He's with us to talk about the ongoing political fight over the tax legislation being considered in the U.S. Senate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you're seeing on taxes in the Senate and the House? Are you on board with the changes that could potentially come if the tax legislation passes? Do you like the idea of tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, individual tax cuts? Are you worried about potential impacts on the deficit or on federal programs? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about the political fight over tax overhaul legislation in the U.S. Senate. Stephen Smith is with us, professor of political science and director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University. And with you, if you call in at 800-642-1234, what questions do you have about the tax plan and the politics surrounding it? Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Before we go to our caller, Stephen, I want to make this complicated story a little more complicated. There's another debt ceiling deal coming up here. Potentially, Democrats supposed to meet with President Trump and Republican congressional leaders today. They opted out, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, after President Trump tweeted, yeah, no deal's going to happen, basically. Here's President Trump now talking about that decision this afternoon.
So they decided not to show up. They've been all talk and they've been no action. And now it's even worse. Now it's not even talk.
So with this debt ceiling looming again, does that have any impact on this tax debate going on?
Well, not directly, but it certainly intensifies the sharpness of the partisan era atmosphere in Washington, and so it doesn't help. But, you know, here are the Democratic leaders put in a position of going to the White House after the president just hours earlier said that there's not going to be any compromise. There's going to be no deal making. You know, it's obvious to them that it's nothing but a photo op. And it puts, you know, those Democratic leaders in a very difficult spot. The president's leadership really is the issue here. The president's the one person who can bring both House and Senate, Democratic and Republican leaders together in one place. And frankly, today, I think he blew it.
Let's go to our callers now on taxes with Ben on the line in Madison. Ben, hi.
Good afternoon. A question for your guest. Is there any support for this tax plan among citizens? Like, is anyone advocating for it, or are there any significant numbers of people who have actually said that they want this?
Well, Ben, I think that the public support for this is tepid. A majority of Republicans seem to support the general idea of tax cuts, but even a majority of Republicans are unsupportive of some of the ideas, like sizable tax cuts for corporations and for the well-to-do. Democrats are pretty uniformly against most of the provisions of the Republican plans, and so all told, a majority of Americans oppose the Democratic bill. I've seen polls that show only a quarter or maybe a third of Americans have, you know, expressed general support for what the Republicans are proposing. So this is actually, I think, a pretty risky political move on the part of the Republicans. They're following through on commitments to cut business taxes and to cut the taxes of most Americans, at least in the very short run. But they're doing it in ways that I think set them up for some political trouble over the next few years.
Ben, thanks for that call. Go next to Stu on the line in Milwaukee. Stu, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Some of my question was answered by the last person's question, but mine was with the taking away of the death tax, the wealthy's tax cut, and the corporate tax cuts being permanent, and the lower income and middle class being sunset, what is the Senate's impression of that action?
Well, I think it's politically dangerous. The Republicans, of course, argue that Congress will not possibly allow those individual income tax breaks and tax changes in tax rates actually disappear. But the Republicans are pursuing a strategy that kind of boxed them in procedurally. In order to avoid a filibuster in the Senate and allow a simple majority in the Senate to determine the outcome here on the tax bill, they needed to follow some budget rules. And those budget rules say that the deficit cannot be increased after 10 years by this bill. And so if you cut taxes in many, many locations, it's bound to cause sharp reductions in revenues and create some deficits out past that 10-year window. And so the easiest way to avoid that is to prevent some of these taxes from occurring, at least artificially say that these tax cuts will come to an end at some point between now and 10 years, and then just cross your fingers that Congress will actually change its mind, put those tax cuts back in place, and avoid the tax hikes that would otherwise automatically come. In the meantime, you just get economic estimates that the deficits aren't going to be as large as projected. I should add, Stu, that the Republicans have put in place a rule that says that the tax bill can increase the deficit $1.5 trillion within the 10-year window, but beyond that 10-year window, it can't increase the deficit at all, and that's put them in a terrible bind.
Stu, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Stephen Smith from Washington University, looking at the latest on tax overhaul efforts currently in the U.S. Senate. Back to your calls now. Richard is with us in Viroqua. Richard, hi.
Hi. I don't know. Maybe you guys can correct me. Aren't we in seven wars currently? And, you know, as far as I know, no tax cut has ever created jobs. So I'm not really sure or understand, other than, you know, transferring wealth to the rich, anything other than that this tax cut does.
Richard. Well, I got you, Richard. Thanks for the call. And, Stephen, that's a core economic debate. Do tax cuts create jobs, or maybe a different question, in what situations do tax cuts create jobs?
Well, you have that exactly right. Some kinds of tax cuts can make a bigger difference than other kinds. The general argument here is that a deep cut, basically a 50% cut in the corporate tax rate, will somehow generate jobs. The argument goes that if business has more money, it'll make more investment. Those investments will create more jobs. The counterargument, which the caller suggests, is that tax cuts certainly create savings for business, but business will put that money to other kinds of purposes. They'll pay off debt. They will increase CEO pay. They'll make new investments, but it'll be in machinery and automation and maybe actually cost jobs in some locations. The Democrats argue that that's generally the case, and what really makes a difference for jobs is more consumers, and that this particular bill doesn't do enough for middle-income Americans. More could be done to increase the size of their tax break so that they had more money to spend, and that might have a greater effect on jobs.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Stephen, let's look at the other side of things here. We've been talking about revenue and taxes. How about spending? There's been concern from critics of this tax plan that it'll basically force the federal government to cut spending, maybe in the so-called entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicaid.
Yeah, two things have been kind of confused. One is that the president himself has said that the next big issue for his administration will be welfare reform. And by that, I think he means, generally speaking, social welfare programs. The two biggest are Social Security and Medicare. I think that there's a very good chance that the Republican Congress will take him up on that, and that would be a major battle over the next year or maybe longer. The second issue sometimes is misread. It is true that when the Republicans put their budget resolution in place that authorized this tax bill, they put also a provision in there that provided for deep cuts in Social Security and Medicare. However, they didn't authorize any legislation to accomplish that, so it was a meaningless gesture. But it kind of indicated their sensibility about how to deal with long-term deficits. And surely, if our long-term deficits do increase by $1.5 trillion over 10 years and maybe more over the longer term, government spending will be the focus. Discretionary spending in domestic programs like education and the environment have already been cut to the bone quite a bit over the last 10 years. That leaves defense spending, and the Republicans want to increase that, and the major entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare.
We'll leave it there for now. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Stephen Smith. He's a professor of political science and director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University. He joined us today to talk about the political fight over the tax overhaul legislation in Congress, passed a key Senate committee earlier today.